Suspense, which is heard on Thursday nights at this hour, is taking its customary summer holiday. Suspense returns to the air 2 weeks from now on Thursday, August 31st.
Ladies and gentlemen, a $5,000 reward will be offered each week on the program immediately following this announcement.
You out there, you who think you've committed the perfect crime, the perfect murder, and that there are no clues, no witnesses, that your identity is unknown, listen.
Somebody knows.
Yes, you, wherever you may be, no matter where you're hiding, somewhere, sometime, someone listening to this program is going to bring you to justice. Yes?
Somebody knows.
Columbia Broadcasting System presents Somebody Knows, a program conceived in the public interest, dedicated to aiding the forces of law and order in the solution of this nation's unsolved crimes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to recreate for you tonight all the known facts in an actual unsolved murder. Somewhere, someone among you has had contact with the killer, or killers. Someone whose identity need never be known, has seen evidence or possesses information that can lead to the solution of this crime.
In the public interest, the Columbia Broadcasting System offers $5,000 reward for evidence or information leading to the arrest and conviction of the killer in this unsolved murder.
We ask you then to please listen carefully, for you may be the one to win this reward.
Somebody knows.
It may be you. And now we open the files on one of this nation's unsolved murders. It's homicide file number 3867 of the Detroit, Michigan Police Department. The unsolved murder of Mrs. Jean Long.
Is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie
down. The time
down
is 8 p.m., Thursday, May 25th, 1944. In the chapel of the Roy Rex Road Funeral Home, 2721 West Grant Boulevard, Detroit, Michigan, where a silver gray coffin lies banked with flowers, the Reverend Newell C. Leesimer, pastor of the 12th Street Evangelical Church, is officiating at memorial services for Mrs. Jean Long.
Goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
At the conclusion of the services, Mr. and Mrs. Robert L. Croyle, the parents of Mrs. Jean Long, sit hand in hand, dazed and bewildered in their grief.
Jean was such a good girl. A good girl. She'd been a hard worker for the church for 18 years. Why did this happen to her? Why? Why?
Let us see if it's possible to obtain an answer to Mrs. Croyle's question. Let us examine some of the more pertinent facts regarding the life and death of Jean Croyle Long. For 17 years, Jean Long lived a quiet, peaceful life in Detroit, working during the day, contributing in her spare time to the 12th Street Evangelical Church. The only rift in her peaceful life was the failure of her marriage to Kenneth Long. For on Sunday, September 26, 1943, she made a final entry in the diary she'd been keeping.
This is the end of our marriage. He left home for good.
It is now Tuesday, May 23rd, 1944. The time is 8 o'clock in the evening. In the parsonage of the 12th Street Evangelical Church, the Reverend Newell C. Leesimer, pastor, is dictating letters to be sent to the members of his congregation who are in the service. Everyone has been putting his Gene Long is cutting the typewriter stencils on them as he talks.
Spent in aiding and abetting the war work, but never for one moment are you out of our thoughts or our prayers. May the good Lord bless you and keep you safe from harm. Well, I guess that does it, Gene.
They're wonderful letters, Reverend. Shall I enclose the church news bulletin with these?
Yes, if you don't mind. Sorry I can't stay and help you, but Mrs. Leesimer and I have a few calls to make.
Oh, that's all right. It'll only... Oh, say, I thought of a poem by Whittier the other day. I thought it might be nice to include in the bulletin.
Oh? Which is it?
The one that goes, I know not what the future hath of marvel or surprise, assured alone that life and death his mercy underlies.
Mm-hmm.
I know not where his islands lift their fronded palms in air. I only know I cannot drift beyond his love and care.
Include it by all means, Jean. I'm sure its message will have great meaning for those who are facing possible death.
Yes, I know it has great meaning for me. Well, I'll run over to the church office and get started on this right away. The letters will be waiting for you in the morning. Good night.
Good night, Jean.
Approximately 8:55 p.m., Tuesday, May 23rd, 1944. Alex Simpson, a friend of Mrs. Jean Long, approaches the Davison Street door of the 12th Street Evangelical Church.
Gene, are you in here?
He goes down into the basement of the church where the office is located.
Gene? Are you down here, Gene? Gene?
Now 9:30 p.m. In the apartment of Mr. and Mrs. Robert Croyle on Oakman Boulevard, a telephone rings.
Hello?
Hello, is Jean home?
Jean? Why, no.
This is Alex Simpson, Mrs. Croyle.
Oh, yes, Mr. Simpson. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Say, I had a date with Jean for tonight, Mrs. Croyle. I was going to pick her up at the corner of 12th and Davidson at 9 o'clock, but she wasn't there when I drove by.
Well, why don't you go into the church?
I did, but she wasn't there either, so I called you up. I thought she might have come home.
Why, no. She hasn't come home.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm sure there's nothing to worry about. She probably forgot about our date and is on her way home now. Sorry I troubled you. Good night, Mrs. Croyle.
Yes. Good night, Mr. Simpson.
It is now approximately 11:30 p.m. Mr. Leesimer stands in the doorway of the parsonage after saying goodnight to a guest. He notices that a light is burning in the basement office of the church.
Oh, that's strange. Either Jean's working very late or... I'd better check on her.
Jean? Jean, are you still here? Jean, are you still working? Jean? Oh, well. She must have just left and forgot to turn the lights out. Jean?
It is now a few minutes past midnight. Wednesday morning, May 24th, 1944. On the sixth floor of police headquarters at 1300 Beaubien Street in Detroit, Michigan, a call comes into the headquarters switchboard.
Police department.
Hello. Hello.
Police department.
You've got to find her for me. You've got to find her.
What is it, ma'am? Is someone missing?
Yes, yes. It's my daughter, Jean. Jean Long. She hasn't come home. No one knows where she's gone. Oh, you've got to do something. She's disappeared.
In just a moment, we'll continue with homicide file number 3867 of the Detroit, Michigan Police Department. The unsolved murder of Mrs. Jean Long.
The United States Armed Forces need volunteers today in every branch of the services. You have the chance to choose not only the branch, but the type of work which you feel will be the most benefit to you in the years ahead. May we suggest that you go to your nearest recruiting office to see if you are eligible to volunteer and inquire about the many opportunities open to you. Now back to Somebody Knows and a true case history of an actual murder.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we'll continue with the rest of the factual information concerning homicide file number 3867 in the records of the Detroit, Michigan Police Department. The unsolved murder of Mrs. Jean Long.
Remember, $5,000 will be paid for information leading to the arrest and conviction of her killer.
It is now about 9 in the morning, Wednesday, May 24th, 1944. Reverend Leesimer leaves his study and starts toward the side door of the parsonage.
Noel, are you going over to the church?
Oh, yes, dear. I want to pick up those letters that Jean got ready for me last night.
Well, while you're there, you'd better look at the flowers on the altar. The choir's going to meet tonight.
Yes, that's right. Those flowers are probably drooping by now. I'll take care of them. Flowers up at the altar. I'd better take care of them first. No. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Hello?
Bill. Bill, this is Newell. Can you come over to the church right away? Yes, something terrible has happened. Jean Long is dead.
The Reverend Leesimer's call has been to Mr. William A. Hammond, Vice President of the Board of Trustees of the 12th Street Evangelical Church. It takes Mr. Hammond about 5 minutes to arrive at the parsonage, and Mr. Leesimer leads him immediately into the nave of the church and down the middle aisle.
You're sure she's Jean Long?
Those are her clothes, Bill.
What's that paper covering her face? I know not what the future hath of marvel or surprise.
Oh, dear.
Assured alone that life and death his mercy underlies.
I know not where his islands lift the fronded palms in air.
What?
I only know I cannot drift beyond his love and care.
What is it, Noel?
A poem
by Whittier. Jean wanted to... That must be the church news bulletin lying across her face.
Did you place it there?
No.
We'd better call the police.
Police department.
My name is Newell C. Lesimer. I'm pastor of the 12th Street Evangelical Church at the northeast corner of 12th and Davison.
Yes, Mr. Lesimer?
I want to report the death of my secretary. I believe she may have been murdered.
Where is she, Mr. Lesimer?
In the church. The nave, she's...
We'll have some men out there right away. Don't touch anything, just stand...
The emergency board operator immediately relays the information across the sixth floor of police headquarters to the operator of the West Side radio station, KQA-371. And the operator sets in motion the speedy, precise machinery of the Detroit police force. Within a few minutes, Chief of Detectives Paul H. Wenzel, Senior Inspector of Detectives Edward Graff, and Detective Inspector John Whitman, commanding the homicide squad, arrive at the scene. The investigation into the death of Jean Long begins. The initial homicide report is made by Detective Lieutenant Harry W. O'Brien of the homicide squad. Contains in part the following information.
Upon arriving at the church, we found the body of Mrs. Jean Long, 40 years old, of 3625 Oakman Boulevard, lying in the nave. Her clothing had been disarranged, and she had been stabbed 3 times in the chest. The left side of her face was badly swollen, and 3 teeth had been dislodged, and her body was covered with blood. Her wristwatch, with the band broken, which was found near the body, had run down at 8:34 o'clock.
Coroner's investigator, Tony Saputi, responds to a call to the coroner's office and removes the body to the Wayne County morgue. A post-mortem examination is begun by Dr. Paul A. Kleba, Wayne County medical examiner, and Dr. Donald H. Comp, pathologist. The cause of death?
Internal hemorrhage following penetrating puncture wound to the aorta. There is no evidence of criminal assault.
A search is conducted for the missing murder weapon. It is believed at first that the murder was committed with some sort of pocket knife. Then, in the small kitchen, adjoining the basement office.
Say, Inspector, mind taking a look at this? Here in this drawer. The lab men have finished the checking for prints, and I think we might check for a couple of more things.
A paring knife.
Yeah, it looks clean, all right. But it's got about a 4-inch blade. It's strong enough to make the wounds we saw.
Okay, I'll have Lieutenant Payne check for blood reactions.
Fine.
Report from Detective Lieutenant James Payne, head of the police scientific laboratory, states...
We've obtained positive blood reactions on the paring knife. Blood reactions were also obtained in the kitchen sink and in the trap under the sink. There would seem to be little doubt that this was the weapon used in the killing of Jean Long.
One of the most important clues in the case is found lying on the floor about 4 feet from the body. It is a portion of a man's fingernail. It is about 1/4 inch long and about 9/16 inch in width. The portion of fingernail is examined by Dr. Comp, the pathologist, and he reports...
The nail is from the thumb, middle, or ring finger of a man's hand. It's my opinion that this man is not a day laborer, as the nail is fairly well groomed. The nail contains pieces of flesh and blood. It was evidently torn away violently during the struggle preceding Mrs. Long's death.
Meanwhile, an intensive and exhaustive investigation is made in an attempt to uncover some clue as to the identity of Mrs. Long's killer, to determine some motive for her death. The entire church membership, her friends, relatives, acquaintances are questioned. The results are negative. However, from the thorough examination made at the scene of the crime, a number of facts are determined. A number of deductions are made. Now here are those facts, those deductions, as expressed by Detective Lieutenant Lane.
The crime took place somewhere between the hours of 8 and 9 o'clock in the evening. No struggle took place in the office. Mrs. Long's work had not been completed. The counter on the mimeograph machine showed only 89 copies of the news bulletins run off. and there were two chairs at the desk and two stacks of envelopes in the process of being filled with the bulletins. As for the church bulletin spread over the dead woman's face, only someone who knew her would have done that, because only someone who knew his victim well would have found it so unbearable to look at her dead face.
From these facts, these deductions, it is possible to form a theory as to what occurred on the night of Tuesday, May 23rd, 1944, to make a possible recreation of the murder of Mrs. Jean Long. Now here is our recreation of that crime. It is sometime after 8 o'clock on the evening of Tuesday, May 23rd, 1944. In the basement office of the 12th Street Evangelical Church, Jean Long is turning out copies of the church news bulletin on the mimeograph machine.
Oh, someone must be at the... Who's there? Oh, it's you. Come in. You're just in time. I haven't finished my work yet. I'll do you a great big favor and let you help me with it.
Jean Long and her visitor go down to the basement office where she's been working.
Here, you can help me stuff these envelopes. Take that chair and I'll use this. Make yourself useful now. Well, be careful.
For some time, Jean Long and her visitor work at stuffing the envelopes with the prepared news bulletins. They laugh and talk for a while as they work. Then something happens. The visitor gets to his feet and walks out of the office into the adjoining kitchen. He opens the drawer containing the kitchen utensils, looks down at it for a moment. Then he removes the paring knife with a 4-inch blade. He starts to return to the office.
You know, we'll never get through here if you keep wandering around like... Now, what in the world are you going to do with that paring knife? No. No, you must be crazy. No!
Terrified, Jean Long runs out of the office, her visitor following closely behind. At the top of the stairs, she tries to turn toward the outer door, but he moves in front of her. She turns and runs into the nave of the church. The visitor is right behind her now. He lunges for her, grasping the rear of her dress.
No, no, don't. No, don't.
It is now Sunday morning, May 28th, 1944, 5 days after the death of Mrs. Jean Long. Services are being held in the 12th Street Evangelical Church. There's no surreptitious whispering. No eyes are turned toward the center aisle. The aisle down which Jean Long had walked 17 years before to the slow strains of the wedding march. The aisle where Jean Long's body was found.
We come today with hearts and minds shocked by the events of the past week. Our minds are perplexed as to what would cause this tragic event to take place. We pray that this grave problem shall be solved and should not be content until justice is met.
Now listen carefully, please. Listen, all of you, wherever you may be. We're going to give you a recapitulation of pertinent facts in the unsolved murder of Jean Croyle Long. Better make a note of them.
And remember, by following the instructions we shall give you in a moment, you may be the one to earn a $5,000 reward.
Now, here are the actual facts in the case. Mrs. Jean Croyle Long, 40 years of age, was stabbed to death at the 12th Street Evangelical Church, 12th Street and Davison Avenue in Detroit, Michigan.
The time, somewhere between 8 and 9 o'clock in the evening, Tuesday, May 23rd, 1944.
The police believe that the crime was committed by a person whom Mrs. Long knew rather well.
The only tangible clue is a portion of a man's fingernail. It was apparently torn away during the struggle preceding Mrs. Long's death. The nail is from the thumb, middle, or ring finger. The nail is fairly well groomed, indicating that the man was probably not a day laborer.
¶¶ Ladies and gentlemen, if any of you possesses information that may have a bearing on the unsolved murder of Gene Croyle Long, and please don't send guesses or hunches, but only actual, authentic information, follow these instructions so that your name and identity need never be made known unless you wish. Now listen carefully.
Write your information on a plain sheet of paper. Do not sign your name. Instead, sign it with six numbers, any arrangement of any six numbers. Then tear off a blank corner of that paper with a ragged edge. Write the same six numbers on that corner and keep it. Mail the rest of the paper with the information to Somebody Knows, Hollywood, California. You need tell no one what you have done.
Mail your letter to Somebody Knows, Hollywood, California. And if the information you've supplied leads to the arrest and conviction of the killer of Mrs. Jean Long, we'll announce your signature number on this program. Then, if you don't want your name to be known, go to your lawyer or your doctor, your priest, minister, or rabbi, and have him present the torn corner of the paper to any CBS station. In this way, you do not need to appear in person.
If the torn corner matches the original paper containing the information, the $5,000 reward will be yours.
Remember, you, wherever you are, you whose name need never be known, may win a reward of $5,000.
Next week at the same time, we'll present another true case history of unsolved murder. It's homicide file number DR295771 from the records of the Los Angeles, California Police Department. The unsolved murder of Elizabeth Short, the Black Dahlia.
You out there, you who have murdered in cold blood and think you've gotten away with it, listen. You cannot escape. There is no perfect crime. Remember, you are not unknown.
Somebody Knows.
Tonight's case was written by Sidney Marshall from information in the files of the Detroit, Michigan Police Department. Research was by Maurice Zim. Music was composed and played by Milton Charles. Somebody Knows is a James L. Saphir production in association with CBS by arrangement with the Chicago Sun-Times and is based on a copyright owned by W.L. Finstad. It was narrated and directed by Jack Johnstone. In order to be eligible for the reward, letters containing actual, authentic information leading to the arrest and conviction of the killer or killers of Mrs. Jean Long must be addressed to Somebody Knows, Hollywood, California, and must be postmarked not later than midnight, September 6th, 1950. Arrest of the guilty person or persons must occur within 90 days of that date, and conviction must be within 1 year of tonight's broadcast. If more than one person gives the information leading to conviction, our judges will divide the $5,000 reward among them in proportion to the importance the judges attach to the facts supplied. And in this, the decision of our judges will be final. Until next Thursday at the same time, this is John Jacobs saying good night, and remember,
Somebody Knows.
There's always an unusual adventure in store for you when Casey, crime photographer, takes his camera in hand to track the criminal to his lair. Stay tuned for his latest adventure, which follows immediately on most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, where you find Arthur Godfrey's daytime program every Monday through Friday on the Columbia Broadcasting System.